It's Tuesday, July 5th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today from Million Dollar Portfolio, Jason Moser. How are you?
Back from a wonderful weekend of celebrating freedom. How about you?
Yeah, the same.
Yeah.
The same. Although not great weather here in the DMV.
It really wasn't. We were a few hours south at our house on the river, and it was the same down there on the river. I mean, it was just one of those things where you're like, okay, I mean, at least I'm in the middle of reading a really good book, and so you can occupy a lot of time that way. But you're not necessarily equating with the weekend of freedom with reading a book, right?
So there's the Capitol 4th celebration every year. A big concert on the mall right at the Capitol building,
yeah.
The fireworks display, all that sort of thing, and it's broadcast on public television. And I didn't see this last night, but I saw on Twitter that there were some people who were upset that what PBS had done, because the weather was so bad here, what they did was they rebroadcast the fireworks celebration from like 6 years ago.
I heard about that. Now, I thought I saw something on Twitter last night that was giving the green light for the fireworks show later last night. So did that not happen? Or
I don't know.
I don't either. I mean,
I don't know. I went to bed.
I guess I've just seen enough fireworks. The older you get, the the more they are just kind of the same.
I do like
thing.
Fireworks.
I mean, I like them. I'm not going to knock them. I mean, I think I'd rather get out of the 4th of July with all my digits intact and just, celebrate freedom.
Safety first, people.
Yes. I mean, that really is the bottom line, right? We want to make it to the next 4th of July.
Exactly. All right, let's get to some of the news of the day, and we will start with Tesla Motors. The company announced it delivered 14,370 vehicles in Q2. That was short of its target of 17,000, and that's on a percentage basis. That's not all that close. That's a 15% miss.
Yeah.
And we are pretty quick to point out when it is earnings season, and you hear Wall Street analysts saying, well, they missed my targets, but we're quick to point out, well, we're not interested in what the analyst targets are. We're interested in what the company's own targets are. This was Tesla's target,
mm-hmm.
and they missed.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, they set that own benchmark. I think the biggest question an investor in this business today needs to answer is, how do they view this company? That really, I think, is going to dictate sort of your expectations and your timeline of sort of where you feel like this investment can go, because probably a lot of people out there today may view Tesla as the electric car company. Then, hey, that's fair. I mean, that's what they make, right? Electric cars. Other people out there might view Tesla as a battery company, because maybe down the line, 10 years, this gigafactory goes online and is producing batteries en masse for electric vehicles everywhere. Perhaps others maybe view this as truly an energy company for the 21st century. And that, I think, is probably a fair way to view it, albeit far more forward-looking, and it assumes, I think, a lot of success there. But again, I mean, I think an investor in this business needs to just try to understand exactly how they view the company today and then invest accordingly, because you can sit here today and say, oh, this is an energy company for the 21st century, but to invest in Tesla with that thesis and then to expect this outsized return over the course of the next 5 years may not necessarily be so reasonable, because 5 years is not going to be enough time for them to build out the energy company of the 21st century. To your point on their targets, I think that's very important. Always note, we talk about that all the time. And to be clear, Tesla's own guidance last quarter, they lay the groundwork for a bar of production of about 20,000 and deliveries of approximately 17,000. And those numbers followed up. The actuals were production of 18,345 and deliveries of 14,370. Yeah, on a percentage basis, that's a big miss. And they talk about the miss as being the ramp up in production and mix and delivery and whatnot, and all sorts of ways to figure out how you want to justify why you missed your own targets. I think the bigger question, though, is, I mean, at some point, and I mean, we know Musk wants to open up his IP for all automakers out there to basically embrace and use. And I think that's great, because if they want to be this kind of a company that sort of changes the way we do things on a global scale, I mean, those are the kinds of things you need to do. It does lose a little bit of its competitive edge, though, there. I mean, if you have everybody producing electric cars, well, that's great for consumers. Now I don't have to just buy a Tesla. I could buy anything, right? And so, I mean, Tesla's done a good job to this point building sort of the brand as being the just really the standard in electric cars. I don't expect that to always be the case. I mean, we see headlines all the time. I mean, there's one out there I was reading the other day about BMW and Intel and Mobileye teaming up to form an autonomous car and electric versions of this. So you're going to see all sorts of competition flow in here at some point, which is going to take away sort of the competitive edge from Tesla on the car front, which is why I think it's important to look at it from the bigger picture as a battery company or an energy company. But again, if you're going to build out this big, aspirational, capital-intensive energy business, I mean, the one thing it's going to require is a lot of capital. And getting that capital is a lot easier said than done, I think, particularly in the short run. And so you have to kind of think about how that will play out for investors. And I mean, to invest in Tesla today and think you're just going to win as an investor automatically because Elon Musk has the reputation that he has, I think is probably a mistake. I'm not saying Tesla's a bad investment, mind you. I mean, I personally don't own any, but I think you just have to be able to look at this. It's going to be an investment I think requires a longer time horizon than probably a lot of people are looking to embrace today.
I think you also have to be, if you're looking at this stock, and the stock's down 3%, it's not a massive sell-off or anything like that, but it's a little bit of a discount. And so if you look at this and you think, all right, maybe this is getting close, you know, it's trading at 209. So if you're someone and you like big round numbers and you're thinking, well, if it gets down to 200, I might open a small position, that sort of thing. I think to your point, you do need to be prepared for almost anything because that's where I think this is business is right now. I think there are a lot of different scenarios. I'm not saying any scenario is on the table, but it's easy for me to imagine that 3 months from now, we're having the exact same conversation, that they have missed their delivery target. It's also easy for me to imagine whether it's 3 or 6 months from now, the Gigafactory is completely on, you know, everything is going their way, and they beat their delivery target by 15-20%, that sort of thing. And I think you could see an even bigger reaction to the upside. So I do think almost any scenario is in play here.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, if you look at the way the stock has performed, I mean, over the past 5 years is phenomenal. I mean, investors have done so well. From a two-year perspective, hey, if you invested in Tesla 2 years ago, you've actually lost a little bit of money. And so I think the stock price certainly bakes in a lot of optimism today. We've seen that play out in many cases before. I think for a very long time, people have jumped all over Amazon and Jeff Bezos for criticizing his business model. It doesn't make any money, and who does he think he is, and yada, yada, yada. And we've seen how that's played out as well. Now, I think it's easier to sort of see the path to success for something like Amazon than it is for something like a Tesla because I think fundamentally retail is just easier to understand than what Tesla's trying to do.
You have a lot more data at your disposal, too.
But I mean,
there's a much longer track record for Bezos and Amazon than there is for Musk and Tesla.
No question. And I mean, when you think about the overall market opportunity, well, hey, I mean, energy is obviously a huge market opportunity as well. And so I think Tesla is going to be the aim is for Tesla to be one of the companies that helps sort of shake that up and change it, so to speak, for the better. That doesn't imply that it will work out for investors. Again, I mean, you go back to what a business like this needs to actually succeed. It requires a lot. I mean, a ton of capital. And however they're going to get that, I mean, Musk is going to get what he wants. Whether the market goes along with it is one thing. I mean, so far, so good. At some point, do they lose patience? Who knows? Probably so. Maybe they get that patience back if there's more demonstrated success. I think this SolarCity acquisition is a huge question mark out there. I mean, SolarCity, to my mind, has been a far more difficult business to ever really fully understand. And I'm not all that big a fan of it, honestly. I mean, I think, again, I like what it stands for. But from an investor's perspective, you know, I'm not really seeing that. The combined entities, I think they've become only more difficult to understand. So this is going to be one of those true jockey plays where if you jump into it, you're jumping into it basically just saying, all right, I'm taking my hands off the wheel, so to speak, no pun intended, and letting Musk take us wherever he may. And that probably works out okay 20 years from now. Who knows? I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Thank you to Troy Springer, one of our longtime listeners, for pointing out our next story on Twitter, because there were a lot of sports over the weekend. Arguably the biggest sports story over the weekend was Kevin Durant, the most coveted free agent in professional basketball, leaving the Oklahoma City Thunder, going to join the Golden State Warriors.
Did that surprise you?
It did a little bit. It surprised me, not that he left Oklahoma City, but that he left for the team that beat him in the playoffs. I really thought if he was going to leave, he would go somewhere. I don't know. It was a little disappointing.
So as a Boston sports fan, and let me be clear, I'm a big Red Sox fan and love to watch them win, but I don't have allegiance to Boston as a sports enthusiast. What was your take on them getting Tom Brady to attend that meeting to see if they couldn't sweet talk him? Because I also saw on Twitter, Big Pappy got in there and threw a couple of words. He's like, hey, sorry I couldn't be there, but, you know, hey, Boston's the city of champions. And
I thought it was great.
Every
team he met with, I think, five or six teams,
something like that.
And I think every team was trying to make the best case that they could.
Sure.
And so if you're the Miami Heat, part of your case is South Beach. You know, this is where you get to live. You know, if you're the San Antonio Spurs, part of your pitch is the economics of playing for a team in Texas that has no state tax, that kind of thing.
And the food.
And if you're Boston, part of your pitch is tradition, just sort of the championship tradition, that sort of thing. But as Troy pointed us to a tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski, I'm butchering his name, Woj, just Woj. He's one of those NBA beat reporters who's just, if you're a fan of the NBA, you follow him.
Something like Wojnarowski, but different.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things he wrote over the weekend was about this deal, the business implications of this deal. For Nike, this is a coup. Nike wanted to slow Under Armour's momentum with Steph Curry and the Warriors. Now Kevin Durant promises to impact Curry's star, which is an interesting way of looking at this, because Durant is a Nike guy. Mm-hmm. Under Armour made a big pitch for him, and Nike topped that deal. Nike didn't make the same mistake with Kevin Durant that they made with Steph Curry. But it's interesting that Woj looks at this as a coup for Nike, and that Durant is automatically going to supplant Curry, because just as a basketball fan, I look at sort of the two of them, and they're two great stars, two of the biggest stars in the league. That's still Steph Curry's team. I don't think this is necessarily as big a – I think it's a win for Nike. I don't think it's as big a win as some people might think.
Sure. I mean, let's define coup, right? I mean, that is, as defined, a notable or successful stroke or move. So I guess – technically, sure, that's a coup for Nike. I mean, it's a win, right? You're going to get one of your biggest stars in the position to win a championship. But let's also remember that if he wins a championship, well, so is Steph Curry. Yeah. And I think that you're right. I think that Golden State, I think this is still Steph's team. I thought it was really cool to see sort of the argument the team was making for this move when they met with Durant. I mean, they were talking about, listen, this is all about strength and numbers. And how many titles do you think they can win without Durant? How many titles do you think they can win with Durant? I mean, this is only a 2-year deal, but I think they have got to be the favorites over the course of the next 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, Cleveland notwithstanding, again, I don't know that. I mean, LeBron, they live and die by LeBron. Golden State's not going to necessarily live and die by any one of these guys. And I think this championship proved that, right? I mean, Steph Curry wasn't on fire, and they still took it all 7 games. And so this is going to make, I think, for great press. I think that Nike and Under Armour will probably have a lot of fun with this. And, I mean, it's, you look at something like college football. Look at the Iron Bowl, right? I mean, you got Alabama versus Auburn. I mean, Alabama's Nike, Auburn's Under Armour. No matter who wins the game, really both labels win. And so, I mean, sure, I think for Woj, it's a fun tweet to make. I think at the end of the day, it's probably, for investors, a short-sighted way to look at things. I mean, I think we all know what Under Armour's capable of doing and what Kevin Plank wants to do with his business. And, I mean, that, in no uncertain terms, is to supplant Nike. So one NBA athlete isn't going to make or break anyone, you know?
good news for fans of, well, iconic brands, I suppose. Hostess Brands, the maker of Twinkies and Ho-Hos, of course, but Hostess is returning to the public markets. There's an investment firm called the Gores Group, which is buying a majority stake in Hostess Brands for $725 million. That's a lot of Twinkies. and so as a result, and the Gores Holdings is a publicly traded entity. And I'm always interested in little nuggets like this. One of the things that I like to look at from time to time in a given stock is the trading volume. How is the trading volume in a given day compared to the average? Gores Holdings has a small market cap, just $110 million. The average trading volume in a given day is about 10,000 shares. And so far, it's the market has not even been open for 2 hours. And already today, 82 times the normal trading volume is going on with Gores Holdings. People are excited.
It's the Twinkie trade.
I think it is. Yeah, the Twinkie trade is happening in force today.
It's the ho-ho gap, right? it's the snowball, right? I mean, there are all sorts of ways we could have fun with this one. Real quick, before I get this on the top of my mind here, just in regard to the Nike Under Armour thing real quick. Interesting to think about this, though. I think that if you look at Under Armour and you think about how important Steph Curry is to Under Armour today, Steph Curry is far more important to Under Armour today than Kevin Durant is to Nike.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Because LeBron James is a Nike guy, and he's a bigger star than Durant.
So I think it's important to note that there was a time, it's not going to be as big of a deal now for Under Armour, but there was a time where they were far, far more dependent on making sure they signed these key athletes that really succeeded. And Steph Curry has been a big part of Under Armour's success to date, no question. I just didn't I think they're two sort of very similar companies in different stages in their life, and it's interesting to see how signing these big athletes sort of helps them evolve. But anyway, back to the Twinkie trade. You know, this is an interesting one because if you look at Gore Holdings, so Gore Holdings is a public company, and basically this is a business that was taken public with the intention of merging with some other entity to become like a new public entity. And it just so happens that it's going to be Hostess, which is really interesting to me because I guess I feel like for all of the fun we have discussing things like Twinkies and Ho-Ho's and snowballs and sort of the nostalgia of going back to our childhood, I mean, let's be clear. These things are not good for you, Chris.
There is nothing. There is nothing that Hostess Brands makes that is even remotely good for you. For all that we were talking the other day about Mondelez, and you can go through the Mondelez portfolio and you can find a few things here or there that are arguably healthy. There's nothing that Hostess makes that's healthy.
No, and I mean, I'm not the kind of guy I don't eat to live. But by the same token, I do care about what I eat. I mean, I'm very attentive. Not very, but I mean, we do a lot of cooking at home. I'm the one that cooks all the dinners, really. So I just enjoy being able to do that and knowing what's going into what we're eating. We give our daughters lunches to take to school and to camps. I mean, never buying this crap to put in there for them just because I don't want to do that to them. And I mean, they, of course, you give them a Twinkie and they're like, oh, yay, a Twinkie. And you're like, oh, yeah, I just made your day. But even they, like, they'll try it. They're like, you know, this isn't really that good.
Yeah. The idea of a Twinkie is so much better than the actuality of the Twinkie.
Bingo. That hit the nail on the head right there. And so to see this as a publicly traded company, I think the idea of it as a publicly traded company is wonderful. I mean, I think we could talk about it probably every episode and have fun with it. But I mean, this is a brand with a history. I don't know that it really has a future. And I mean, I don't think it's not like you can just slap organic on the label and change everything, right? I mean, these guys are selling a key lime slime Ghostbusters Twinkie. I'm not putting that in my child. I mean, they don't want that stuff. They like the thought of it better than they like the product. I think that's going to be a big hurdle for Hostess.
And yet, Someone's buying.
Someone is.
There's a lot of trading going on.
Someone is.
I was thinking about this when I first saw this story. You've seen the movie Moneyball, right?
Yes.
So Brad Pitt plays Billy Bean, based on Michael Lewis's book, a great book and a great movie. There is a scene in Moneyball that if I ever get the chance to interview Brad Pitt, one of the things I'm absolutely going to ask him is about this scene, because it's the scene in Moneyball that is sort of the turning point where Billy Bean has decided we need to shake up the team. And so it's the season isn't going quite how they want, and he decides we're going to make some trades, that kind of thing. And he's sitting down with Jonah Hill, and they trade a player and that sort of thing. And then he gives Jonah Hill his marching orders, like go tell that guy he's traded. I'm going to go. And he's saying, you know, I'm going to go tell this guy he's traded. And right before, I think Jonah Hill says to him, like, do you want me to do that? And Brad Pitt takes a Twinkie and stuffs the entire thing in his mouth and points to himself. He's like, no, I got this one.
I got this.
Now, what I want to know is, how many times did you have to shoot that scene? Because that's one of those things that if you don't nail that the first time, if, you know, if the director's like, Brad, the lighting was off. Can you stuff another 20? You know, if you have to do 10 takes of that,
no.
Is he swallowing it every time? Is there a basket that he has to spit it out in? Like that, for whatever reason. If I get to sit down with Brad Pitt, I'm asking him about the Twinkie scene.
It's a committed actor. I mean, I'm sitting here making fun of people eating Twinkies as I drink my Diet Coke, which is chock full of caramel color and aspartame and phosphoric acid.
It's not organic?
No. You know what? I mean, if they slapped organic on it, oddly enough, I probably would feel a little bit better about it, but I still wouldn't feel good.
Yeah.
You know? That's why I took the New Year's resolution was to cut back on these and drink more water. So far, so good, but every once in a while, I've got to indulge.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Life is short. Indulge.
It is.
Which is why Hostess Brands has a business. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Dan Boyd. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.